Hey everybody, welcome back to Game Store Profits, the podcast where we sit down and we talk about the Lord, we talk about games, and just how they can still be in the same room and have a good time. My name is Jeff Romo, and as always...
And I'm Mike Perna.
That's right. So, bit of a weird week, or a couple weeks for me, away from the game board, unfortunately. I didn't get a chance to really get into too many games, but I had a couple of cool experiences. How's your life been lately?
Things are a little bit of crazy, but, you know, it's the time of year when that happens. We're, you know, as we're recording right now, it's the week after Thanksgiving, and all the craziness ensues.
Yeah.
Because holidays bring about a time when you're doing a lot of traveling, especially for those of us who are married and have now a couple different families that we're kind of spreading ourselves in between.
Yeah. Bringing together the families. That's always fun.
It's really nice to have both sides of your family pretty close by most of the time.
Yeah.
But it's right around the holidays when both families, because you're so close, expect you to be there. That's when it gets a little more hectic.
Yeah, I've been a participant in the shared custody situation for like about the last 13 years of being married. So I feel you, man. I feel you.
So I've actually had a chance to sit down a couple times actually with my wife, speaking of, and get to game with her a little bit, which is always nice because we're finding more and more games that really fit her niche, because she's not a gamer by any means. She humors me. But we are discovering a couple games that she really enjoys. I'm finding out what genres really hit the mark. Mm-hmm. So I will say that one of the games we did, she likes it a lot. It definitely hits a couple of different switches for her. But the other one, she didn't dislike, but it was that look across the table of, oh, you want to play again? No, I'm really... I'm okay.
Thanks for bringing it to the table. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're excited about this one. Unless, I don't know if you said that you didn't necessarily have anything to the table, because I can go right into that if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, basically, a couple items that I was able to, or a couple games I was able to get into. One was Mouse Guard, which is a role playing game, and then primarily prep time for a couple of side projects I have going on for En-ROADS that will be coming out next year. So that's kind of been my life, along with family fun.
Well, tell me a little bit about Mouse Guard before we get into the board games and stuff, because I've been curious, because I love the Mouse Guard comic.
Yeah.
Is an absolutely amazingly done bit of storytelling. Every once in a while, I'll just find myself rereading about all the Black Axe books.
Yeah.
And they're just really great. I'm curious as to how a role-playing game would fit kind of into that world. So tell me a little bit about your Mouse Guard experience.
Yeah, you know, it actually is a pretty good port of the comic book. It does a pretty good job of bringing the material into a game space. The cool thing is that it's the rule set itself is based off of Torchbearer, which is in and of itself based off of Burning Wheel. So it kind of goes from like a super complicated, really in-depth character creation process and then an interactive process in the role-playing game, to the point where there's rules that are there to support some of that relational interaction, which is really cool. And then it parses it down a little bit more for Mouse Guard to kind of bring it into like a mousy situation, because you're not a human being. You're in a tiny little world, and you are portraying these mice who are in charge of protecting this realm. So if you aren't familiar with the comic book, maybe you might have a touchstone with like the Rats of Nim, or maybe Watership Down, where you have a set of mice that have been given intelligence that has built a society, that built structures, buildings, villages. They have an entire country that they're built into. You know, obviously thinking of the scale of it, it's real tiny, but it's huge to them. But The beginning part of the game, which is really nice, the character creation process, is you pick a particular class that you want to be. And it's, you know, you're related to the Mouse Guard, whether you're what's called a Tenderfoot, which you're like or a Tenderpaw, which you've just now gotten into the military experience, or you can be a Grizzled Veteran, whatever, and you know, choices in between. And then you start building your character information based on that choice. So if you're a Grizzled Veteran, then you can decide, well, I became a veteran because I've been in the military my entire life and I've survived this long, but I might be missing a paw, or I might, you know, whatever the case is. So you get to have a lot of fun fleshing out the character. And then as far as gameplay goes, the rules are really good about not being so black and white when it comes to, like, do I hit a thing? And then, you know, what happens to that thing? It's like, okay, well, you rolled a certain success. Let's say, you know, you have like three successes that you incur on your particular set of dice rolls. And the GM can decide, well, you know what, you needed five, so you got close, so this happened. I'm going to give you this thing that you wanted, but here's something that might happen that kind of adds a little flavor. So the rule set is very dynamic, which I totally enjoy in a role-playing game. You know, again, the scenery. It's the scenery that's been involved. The jam we had is really good about expressing, like, what's going on around you. You know, walking through a meadow is like being in a forest almost. You know, you're having to worry about weasels, which is your arch enemy. Obviously, if you've read the comic, you know that part. You know, you have, you know, have you been in experience with weasels? Have you fought them? Have you been in a recent war dealing with owls? Or the unique experience that was like about an hour-long portion of the session of trying to negotiate with a group of squirrels was fantastic, because the squirrels were like psychedelic, non-sensory. It was just so much fun. But yeah, totally enjoyed the game.
It was always interesting to me, just the how the world works from the comics.
Yeah.
Because in a world where your main characters are mice who are able to speak and everything like that, then you have, like, the owl. The owl, basically, in the comics, is treated like it's a dragon. Like, yeah. It is this epic, terrifying creature. Yeah. And you're like, well, how come if the mouse can talk... What? But it doesn't take long for me to just kind of just hand wave that and be like, no, it's just awesome. Just deal.
And you know, the GM was really good about like building that into the scenario that we're playing. There was a portion where one of the characters had what's called they have these skills called wises. You know, it's like you're either street wise or you're forest wise or, you know, whatever. And he had picked owl wise. So every time we're like walking through the forest, there's this one mouse, this little thin, raily blonde mouse that's always searching the skies. And you never know why, because we don't know him very well. And it turns out his family was attacked by the owl. And so he's always searching the sky. And so there was this one part where the GM kind of fed into that paranoia that the character had built up. And there was a shadow that passed over us. And it was just like, everybody froze. And we're like, what do we do? What do we do? Because you know, if you experience it, it's like fighting a dragon, you're dead.
Oh yeah, it is. It literally becomes like when you're level one and you stumble on an elder worm. Like, it's it is not something that you like the normal RPG gamer desire to just get it. Let's kill it. No. If you do that, you become dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So yeah, lots of fun with that one. That was really cool. So let's turn it over to you, man. Let's hear some more board gamey stuff, because I heard you were into a couple of good ones.
Yeah, I have not. You know, the Numenera crew, we did Extra Life, but we haven't gotten back together yet. So role playing is not in my cards right now. It is literally just board gaming, and specifically board gaming with my wife. Let's start with the one that I think is less upfront as far as story value, because it's a game that's been around a while. It's a game that has lots of expansions that I don't own yet and can't speak to, but it was a ton of fun. It's a deck builder called Eminent Domain.
Yeah.
It's been around a while for, you know, people still love it. Like, I tweeted, hey, I've been playing Eminent Domain with my wife, and just every social media I put it on just blew up with people going, that game is awesome. I know it's been around a while, though. And I will say that, yes, my wife really, really enjoyed it. It took her a little bit. There's a few more working parts than a bunch of other deck builders that she's used to. So it did take her a minute to kind of to grab hold of it. But when she did, it just took off. And she ended up, you know, I'd played the game before, so I did kind of have that kind of head start on her.
Right.
And I did end up winning the game mostly because I had that head start. But she was a lot closer than one would think, having never played the game before. So the whole idea of Eminent Domain is that you are basically space explorers trying to go out and either colonize or conquer planets just throughout the universe. And there are different roles that every turn you're basically adding one of these role cards to your deck. The roles are Survey, which helps you find more planets out there. Colonize, which lets you, when you find those planets, you can actually set up colonies there. Warfare, which lets you conquer planets. And colonize and warfare basically are just two ways to get planets. There's not like a, at least not in the base set. I mean, I've heard there's all sorts of craziness that goes on with expansions, but yeah. In the base set, they're basically two ways to just get planets under your control. There's research, which lets you get these really super cool power-ups based on what type of planet you have. You can get different amazing technologies that do crazy things, like get a whole bunch of ships that you use to conquer planets, just a pile of them. There's one that basically provided one type of card for like every type of role. So anytime you wanted to boost up, you automatically got one extra. There's lots of different cool stuff that research lets you do. There's trade and production, which if once you've conquered planets, you can actually get resources from those planets and then sell those resources for influence or victory points, basically. And I think that covers all of them. Yes, I believe that covers all the role cards. So basically, every turn you're adding one of the cards, and you can then take the cards that are already in your hand and kind of boost that to make it more powerful, to get more cards or more resources, etc. So you're basically in a constant race to see who can get the most planets, who can discover them and conquer them, get more influence points than the other people. It is a really, really interesting game just to see that play out. Because the planets are all different. Some of them have more, you can produce more on certain planets. Some give you added bonuses, like you can hold another card in your hand, or this counts as a survey card every time, or all these different things. Some are worth more influence than others. So, like any deck builder, your strategy is going to slightly change depending on what cards you're actually getting in your hand. But I definitely kind of have settled into my own personal strategy of how I normally go about. I am a producer. I love to just get a whole bunch of planets and then just trade my way to victory, get all sorts of victory points together, because that's actually one of the ways you trigger the end of the game, is if all the influence little tokens that they give you, if all of them are gone, then you total points and see who wins. It's a lot of fun in a, you know, I got it on sale, which is why I ended up getting it. It was on a Cool Stuff daily sale for $15.
Yeah, that's usually like 30 bucks, right?
Yeah. So it's not exactly a super expensive game even without the sale, but if you catch it right, and I've just recently saw it on sale again, so it does happen quite a bit. It's definitely worth a pickup, especially if you like deck builders.
Yeah.
It's also interesting, too, because once one player, the lead player, picks the role, every other player gets the option of either following and doing the same, using cards in their hand to do the same action, or dissenting and basically pick up another card. Let me put it this way. The thing that is really interesting about, or really kind of annoying, actually, about deck builders is that it's kind of a solitary experience. What the other people are doing rarely affects what you're doing.
Right, until you come into contact, and then it's just those little sporadic moments.
Right. Eminent Domain does a really good job of making sure that you're always interested in what the other people are doing, because you have the option to follow or dissent. So you always have to be paying attention to what the other people are doing, just so that you can weigh the options. And so that that kicks, for me, that kicks it up to a upper echelon of deck building for me. I enjoy deck building, but it gets to the point where it's a little stale just because of the fact that, okay, yeah, I'm going to do my thing and then I'm going to wait for everyone else to do their thing before I get to go again. But Eminent Domain really ties it together so that you're never really out of it. It's never to the place where you don't care what the other people are doing. So that's nice.
That is good. Keeps you engaged.
Yeah, and my wife really enjoys deck builders, so she kind of took to this, and this game got her really happy. She was really excited about it. Even though she did lose, I definitely think that's one that I'm going to get to be able to play with her again.
Nice.
The other one, I think, as far as the value of the game itself, I think there's a lot more value in this game, but it didn't necessarily hit the same kind of level with my wife.
Yeah.
That is a little game that was, you can find it on print and play right now. You can also, I believe if it's not available at retail, it's almost available at retail. I haven't looked into that recently, but I got it through the Kickstarter. And it's a little game called And Then We Held Hands.
Now, this one I've been definitely interested in finding out just simply because I'm getting it connected over at my church for our marriage group. So, yeah.
Yeah. The long and the short of And Then We Held Hands is basically it's a game played in silence. You are not actively communicating with each other about what you're planning to do because you actually play not only from your hand, but you can also play from the hand of the person you're playing with. The theme of this game is that you are playing as a married couple, or at least a couple in a relationship, and that relationship is failing. So communication, the reason you play in silence is because communication is rocky at best.
Right.
So you're not always communicating properly. You're not always saying exactly what you're thinking, exactly what you're feeling. So the way the game actually represents that is by playing in silence. And so every round, there's a goal. There are different colored dots all around the board. It's basically concentric circles. And the goal is you have to play cards matching those colors to move your way across the board. There are a couple different rules. You can't cross the path of the other player. So if you're next to that player, you can't kind of jump over them. You kind of have to double back. There are three sets of various goals that you have to do. Until you've completed the first one, you can only move around the outer ring of the circle. When you finish that first set and you move on to the second set, then you can move to the second set of rings. And then when you get to the last set of goals, you move into the middle, and then eventually the goal is to get to the absolute center where both of you meet in the middle. The way you do that is, it's really interesting because each card has two colors on either side. And depending on what side of the board you're on, changes what color you can pick from for that card. It's a really neat little mechanism. It's called perspective card. And the perspective card basically covers one side. The idea being is that you're in a certain state of mind because you can't get out of your own perspective.
Right, you can't get out of your own way sometimes too.
Right, you see things, regardless of how it is, you see things a certain way.
Right.
And so you can only pick from one of the two colors on the card.
See, now that's great. That's just good design right there. It's simple, but it's effective.
Oh, the design elements of this, like I said, it's available for print and play. And if you want to if you're not sure about how this game plays, but you want to check it out, definitely do the print and play. And I'm pretty confident that you're going to then move on to the actual produced copy. Because it's a really, really interesting mechanism. I think one of the reasons why Suze didn't really connect with it is because of the fact that it actually like labels the emotions on the cards. Like it'll say sadness or anger or whatever. And she kind of was looking for those emotions to mean more than just this is a positive emotion and this is a negative emotion.
Right, to kind of go into a little bit more depth of what it would mean to her if she was, you know, going through that, maybe.
Right, and that isn't there. Like I said, it basically breaks down to this is positive and this is negative, which that actually does mechanically affect things, because your goal is to be balanced, to be not, you know, just all about yourself and all positive and yeah, and all angry and taking it out on the other person. Your goal is to be balanced and in the middle. It's the only way you actually don't get new cards unless you find yourself balanced on this little scale on your side of the board. Every time you move to a positive emotion, it moves to the right. Every time you move through a dot that is representative of a negative emotion, you move to the left. And so, like, say you move from where you are and you hit a positive, a negative, and a negative. You'd go one to the right and then two to the left. So not only are you trying to get to the goal, which is, you know, you flip a card and it says, oh, I need to get to a blue circle. I need to end my turn at a blue circle. Mm-hmm. So not only are you trying to get to that and make sure that you have cards to get you there, you're also dealing with the balance. So ideally you want to get to a place where, you know, maybe you don't reach the goal, but you end balanced so that you can get more cards so that you can keep playing.
Right.
Because I will tell you that when Susan and I played, we actually ended up not succeeding because it was our first time playing, we didn't understand card management. So there were times when both of us were off balance. And so neither of us got new cards. And we didn't have the colors we need. And the game says that if there's ever a point where neither one of you has a valid move, it's basically representing the fact that your argument has gotten to a place where you hit that irreconcilable differences, like you're not moving right forward, then it's right. Game over.
Now, with the experience with, like, the negative emotions, is it, like, attributive to, you know, like, when you're going through a rough patch, or is it because you're actually expressing a negative emotion to the other person?
No, it, you know, mechanically, it's a little bit lacking mechanically, in all honesty. Mm. As much as I love this game, just the fact that there's nothing tied to this is negative other than you're moving balance to the left. Okay. Like, it's not like there's this weight of, oh, you were angry right here. It just, you're moving the balance to that side of the board.
Okay.
But I do think that the weight of it is more along the lines of just being able to have that communication, just not in the components themselves, but just the two people playing it. Because remember, this game is played in silence. So you can say, you know, if you're literally leaning over the table and saying, oh, I'm going to put myself here so that next turn I'll be in the right spot, and I need you to not play that red card because I need it next turn. This game, if you could do that, then this game is silly. This game is, it's not, there's mm-hmm. no value in the game, because it's just like, okay, it just becomes a puzzle.
So does it dissolve into pantomime, or is it more of like...
No, it's literally, you're not supposed to do anything to the, you're basically supposed to watch what the other person's doing and just understand that that's where they're going.
Okay.
You're trying to see and pay very close attention to what they're doing and what you think their intentions are, to plan out and make sure that that's available to them.
So you're not like going, like, you know, giving them the bug eyes and like saying, don't do that, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, like anything like this, just like when we talked about the Grizzled, you can just play the Grizzled and just literally say, you're giving a speech right now. You're going to tell me that, you know, say bullet, say get rid of bullet cards. You know, you can do that, but it takes away an aspect of what the game is.
Yeah, that's more what I was getting after, is what is the game really getting at when it comes to completely non-communicative interaction, I guess, if that's a misnomer.
It's funny because mechanically, like I said, the words don't mean much. The fact that you played anger doesn't change anything other than the balance of your little, the place you are on the board.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where you are actively, intentionally watching what the other player's doing and being like, okay, what are they trying to do? Are they just running for the goal? Do I need to make sure I have balance so that we have cards? Oh, they're going to need this, but I need it here. And everything is, it's internal. And I really, really, like, my wife was super tired when we played it, so I got her to play once, and then we really didn't have a debrief. But you were talking about the potential of doing this with, you know, as actual couples, like, counseling.
Yeah, like, you know, dealing with, you know, with couples who not so much are on the brink of devastation, but just to kind of outline the importance of communication.
Right, and I think that playing this game in and of itself is not going to be where you're seeing that. It's the debrief that's going to happen afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. Because the actual mechanics of the game are fairly simple. Play the right cards to get your person, get your little figure to the right place, and then move towards the middle of the board. Like, the actual mechanics are not the deep part. It's fun and it's simple and it's right. Fairly easy to get your head around, but I think it's in the debrief. It's in the after the how did you try to communicate that this was happening? Like, what did you think when so-and-so took three of your cards? Like it's in that debrief that you really get the value of this game.
That's an important note. I am duly noting it. So I'm curious now, like, if there is an opportunity to play it again, or if you see other people playing it, like, if they play it, it would be interesting to see how different couples react to the game. You know, like, some of them may be better at it, or...
I don't even think it... Like, there's a reason why I said it's anyone in a relationship. I don't think it's even just relegated to couples.
Right, it could be friends, or...
Oh,
or
yeah, any...
Business associates.
Family members. I mean, anybody... I mean, basically, the game is about communication without actively communicating.
Right.
It's about trying to put yourself into the mindset of another person. It is empathy codified.
Nice. Actually, I'm going to put that as the quote. Empathy codified. I like that.
You are literally putting yourself into the place of the other person, saying, what are they feeling? What are they doing? And how can I both do what I want to do as well as allow them to be where they are?
Right.
And do what they're doing. Because the fact that the game is played in silence kicks this up to a whole other level, because you find yourself not being able to talk strategy. And now, I know there are some people, as much as I'm saying this game is awesome, there are some people where that will drive you insane. I know for a fact, the one time when I played the Grizzled and people are like, well, why can't we talk about what cards we should say? I go, because it's not the spirit of the game. And they're like, yeah, but I want to win. And this game would drive them nuts, because there's no way to plan. There's no way to actively plan, right? Because you can't physically. It does say, like, yeah, you can talk about, like, the weather or small talk in between, but when it comes to your moves, you're not supposed to talk about it. Even that in and of itself thematically is funny to me. Like, you can talk about everything but the problem, which, oh my goodness, you wanted to talk about representing bad communication, talking about everything but the problem, just, it's so perfectly embodies that to me.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. No, that's cool.
So it's that tension of, do I make the move to put me in the right spot? Do I keep that card available to the other person so that they can be in the right spot? All the while just trying to move closer and closer into the center of the board and making sure that you always have the right cards. It's really, really interesting. All you're keeping track of your location on the board, your balance, the placement of the other people. And this isn't even talking about the argument cards, which we didn't play the argument cards because it says when you're learning how to play this game, we don't recommend you doing this. I'm really interested in the argument cards because what they're represented by gray bars on the outside of the cards.
Okay.
And the idea is that
it sounds like this is something that's purposely meant to, like, unbalance the balance you're seeking.
Oh, it definitely kicks it up to a whole other level, because normally you're not even supposed to be, like, near each other on the board. You can't cross each other. You know, you're basically, for the ease of use, you're trying to avoid each other. What happens with an argument card is that in order for an argument to be resolved, you have to move to the same place.
Mm.
Your two people have to be in the same place. So you not only do you have to move to the right color, you have to both be on that color, on that same dot.
Oh, man.
So the idea of how you resolve an argument is literally, no matter where you are, you have to get to the same place in order for that argument to be resolved.
That's cool.
And it's a really interesting mechanic when you talk about the theme of this game, because of the fact that in order for there to be resolution, you need to find that commonality. You need to find that, you know, we're in this together. We're going to come to the same place. We're going to come to an understanding, and then we can move on. It's really, really interesting with the theme. Again, if you're looking for just straight up mechanic, it's, you know, it's a thing. It's not that great. It's fine. But when you bring in that theme, when you really think about what's happening here, and again, this is why I think the value in this game is in the debrief, not necessarily as much in the actual playing of it. I think that there is, this game is, it's kind of like a really great art house movie. Because when you're watching a really great art house movie, there are times, at least for me, when I found myself going, am I enjoying this?
Stay tuned for next episode as Games for Profits goes hipster.
Yeah, like there are times when I'll be watching a movie and go, why am I watching this? Like I'm not
this
having
is so
that
uncomfortable.
but that's the thing. It's afterwards when I go, oh, that's what that did. Oh my goodness, that's amazing. And I talk about it and I dissect it, and yeah. I go, you know, yeah. In that moment, it wasn't a bad thing. Like I don't. There's not been a time when I'm like, man, I really wish I didn't do that. Right. But there are times when I'm just like, yeah, that's a thing. But then it's in the, it gives you so much to chew on after the fact. It gives you so much just stuff to chew on. Just, I know I said that a couple times already, but that I can't think of a better way to describe that.
No, it makes sense. That makes sense the way you're describing it.
And I think it's interesting right there, just to break down just the effect of theme. Because, especially because when you're talking about board games in general, you can play a game that is virtually themeless. I mean, heck, that's Euro games. Euro games, basically every theme in a Euro game is tacked on. There's a reason why I always call them cube pushers, because it doesn't matter what they are. Playing Lords of Waterdeep and getting the right, you know, they'll tell you, oh yeah, it's getting the cleric and the warrior. It's cubes. Unless you go out and buy the super special meeples in the box, it's cubes. So those cubes can really represent anything. Yeah. It's just they're telling you they represent fighters and clerics and rogues and whatever. The fact that you have this theme takes this from a mildly entertaining afternoon to something that, I mean, my wife was exhausted again, so we didn't have this. But even after that, when she went to bed, I was just like, man, this game. And I thought about all the different stuff that happened. Like there were times when I took, because you can play any number of cards from either hand. And there were times where I'm like, man, I was a real jerk. Because I didn't think about the fact that two turns from now we needed X color. Because if you don't draw cards, like we got ourselves in a terrible place. Because all we had left were like blue cards. And none of us was next to a blue dot.
So you're stuck.
So we're just like we did not plan ahead on this. And when you really consider, like, this is a couple going through just really, you know, a devastating, like, separation.
Yeah.
And you're watching this play, and then you start thinking, how did we get it? Even the fails. This is what I love about this game. Even the failure state caused me to go, well, how did we get here?
See, and there's the phrase, right? Is like, you get to that point in a relationship, and you're like, you look around and that's the common phrase, right? How did we get here?
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. That's good stuff.
And so like I started breaking down like my own plays. I go, oh, you know, I took too many of her cards. She didn't have enough to do anything, because You won't, like I said, you only get new cards if at the end of your turn you're at perfect balance. So there were times when I was pulling multiple cards from her end of the table to get to my goal, but she was not even near balance. She was literally on the far end of the spectrum. So she had to work super hard even to think about getting balance, but here I am taking her cards. Because I was just trying to meet the goal.
You were looking for the goal, right? You weren't seeing the other side.
And I'm looking at this stuff going, wow. And before anyone worries, no, my wife and I are probably in the best part of our relationship we've ever been in.
Right.
But, oh my goodness. I'm just sitting there going, oh, honey, I'm sorry. Like, I was a terrible person, and that's why we failed at this game.
At least you're not walking away with an argument. You're walking away with an interesting discussion.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something interesting about that, because especially, you know, I don't want to get into all the craziness, but the way things are going now, just in the broader world spectrum, so much of where the problems are happening is the fact that as just universally, we are just not taking that effort to put ourselves in the other person's place. We are not taking that time to ask ourselves, like God pretty much demands of us, to basically look at somebody else and say, how do I make sure that you succeed in this?
Right. It's a perspective shifter. I mean, we're in a culture, you know, such as ours. I mean, it's very self-appointed. It's very self-directed. It's self-absorbed. You can even throw that out there, to the point where it seems like being thoughtful for one another is almost like become compulsory. Like, it's, you know, you get the public square shaming type thing. Like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. Something needs to be done. And then so people move on it and try and get it done. But it's almost kind of like a compulsory feel rather than a natural feel.
I saw today a phrase that apparently I saw it in the headlines of a couple different articles. And so I hate the fact that this is a phrase, that prayer shaming.
Ugh, no. And get me started on that.
Like, that was a phrase that got used in the news today, and just this idea of, you know, I can't believe these people are up there from a pulpit or from a podium saying, you know, my thoughts and prayers go with you. Now, yeah. I get, before we get angry emails, I get what people are trying to communicate with that, you know, that there needs to be action and that there needs to be more than lip service. But the fact that we're in a place where the phrase prayer shaming is even a thing.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of this game and the, you know, even when we're doing good things, if we're doing it with the understanding of we're going to make this good thing happen and, you know, screw the casualties.
Right.
Like, I think that there is a lot of value in saying, you know, oh, let's do this right. Let's do this awesome. Let's get good things happening. Let's help people. And, you know, I want all of that to happen.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, if you're being, if it's not an impetus that's within you, you know, and it's not something that you're moved towards because there's, you know, in our parlance, it's, you know, the Holy Spirit moving inside of you. You see something, you react to it in a certain way, but the Holy Spirit really pushes you forward and says, there's something that needs to be done here. And it helps you open your eyes to the things around you, the needs that are around you, you know, like in this game, you know, it opens your eyes to saying, oh, okay. You know, like you said, the debrief, oh, okay, that's what you were going for. Now my eyes are a little bit more open to what your methodology was and, you know, why your heart led you to go and do this. And I don't know. It's like you said, it's shaming, or is it really the impetus within you? I guess that's kind of my point.
I think that the big thing it does, it revolves around, you know, it being other-centered.
Yeah.
Which is something that I think all of us, even, you know, people who aren't in the Christian circles, I think all of us want to be in that place.
Oh yeah,
where we want to help those and have that mindset of how can I be the best person, and how can I, you know, really just be out there for other people and take care of the needy. And we all want to be in that place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, really difficult, even for people who love God and really want to see that. There's a reason why it's one of the greatest commandments that God gives to us is, you know, love the Lord your God and love others. These are the two commandments.
Right.
There's a reason that that's the case. I think it's partly because of the fact that we suck at it.
And even in that second command, it even builds into the idea of the Lord is saying, I kind of know how you're built because I built you, but you know, it says love others as you would love yourself.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, we know we can be that way. We can be self-centered and self-preservationist, but we need to feel that way about others. Like you said, other-centric.
One of the greatest lessons I got taught when I was a kid was from my dad. And my dad, to this day, even now, he's been at the company forever. But to this day, my dad is in charge of a bunch of guys who work in the shop at the place that he works. And my dad puts in 12-hour days, and then he works Saturdays. And when I was a kid, you know, I was not deprived or anything. My dad was always, he always went out of his way to be with us as much as possible. But, you know, he'd work these 12-hour days. He'd get up in the morning and be on his way to work at 5 and not come home till 5 at night. And I go, Dad, you know, you're busting your butt. Like, why do you have to go in on Saturday? And there have been lots of great moments with my dad teaching me this sort of thing. But he goes, look, I ask these guys to do it. He goes, there's no way that I can ask my guys to come in on a Saturday and put in these hours and do this stuff. I can't ask them to do it if I'm not willing to do it myself.
Right.
And I need them to do it, so I need to do it too.
Yeah, servant leadership, baby.
Yeah, and it's that idea of just knowing. He goes, this sucks, and we all know it sucks, but at the same point, it has to happen. And he goes, just that moment of being able to say, I can't make you do something that I'm not willing to do. I can't ask you to give up so much of your time and stuff that you'd want to be with your families and you want to, you know, be enjoying your weekend, because I can't make you do that and not be and you know, run off and do it myself. It's just that half a second to be like, wow, what does this feel like on their end?
Right.
And how do I make it so that we can all keep moving forward? Because like I said, it was, you know, we were killing it early on when we were playing, and then we held hands, we were killing it. Goals were getting just taken out left, right, and sideways. And we practically sprinted through the first set of goals. We're like, yeah, this is great. We're going to do this. We're going to kill it. First game. Awesome.
Look how balanced we are.
Yeah. But then we were so busy completing the goals that we got ourselves way out of whack, and then we were still acting like everything was fine. We were still pulling like 3 and 4 cards a time to meet the goal when we were not even kind of balanced. So we weren't getting the cards we needed. We weren't seeing the kind of stuff we needed. It's because we were just like, oh yeah, everything's fine. We were completely in denial of the fact that we were way off base. And it's really interesting to see this played out in the simple theme of a board game. And I think that it's really neat because, you know, we've said this before, board games allow you to express things that if you were to call somebody on it, if you were just to say, you're a terrible communicator, or you're selfish, or you're so goal-oriented that you're willing to push down anyone in your way, if you just come out and say that to somebody, they're going to be insulted and not listen to anything you say. But if you sit them down and play this game and you watch it played out and you just ask the question, why is it that you think you lost this game? Yep. And you can literally walk through play by play.
Here's my thought process. Here's where I was going. And like you said, you're like, oh, really? And you're not led to saying, oh, you big idiot. You're led to saying, I'm totally sorry. I totally missed that.
Yeah, like I said, that balance thing, that you don't get new cards unless you are balanced.
Yeah.
That, because early in the game, like I said, there were times when I'd pull like two of Susan's cards as well as like two of mine. And be like, oh, it's fine. We're all going to get new cards. It's fine. Which is fine when you're balanced and you're working towards it and everything's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, when everything is good in the relationship, you can do that. You can,
right. I could pull those cards from Suze because she's just going to get new cards to replace them and everything's good.
Right.
But I kept doing that when things weren't good. And that's the kind of thing that you do. Even the best relationships, there are times when, you know, like I said, Suze and I are in a place that we're probably the best we've been since the day we got married. Like, things are probably is better than they've ever been before. But there are still times where Susan's like, you do realize that what you just did was really awful and I it really hurt me. And I'm like, oh, crap, I did not. I did. I'm an idiot.
Right.
And, you know, it's just because it's because you just step out. You step out of that intentionality of how, you know, being in that other person's headspace. You step out.
Yeah, we all fall into that trap. You know, you get caught up in the moments of life, you know, work, ministry, you know, extracurricular activities, that sort of thing. I mean, this last week, I was talking at the beginning of the podcast, has been really trying on me, you know, with family issues coming up. And it's like all of a sudden I'm realizing I'm mandated to think about somebody else right now. And now it's all of a sudden it becomes more clear, like, well, this is impacting my wife here, and this is impacting my work here, and my boss here, and, you know, my ministry here. And it's all of a sudden when you're thinking, you're in that other person's headspace, it's like all of a sudden you're thinking, I'm thinking about other people now too.
Well, and it's funny because I literally just opened up my box to kind of get inspiration for how I want to kind of head towards wrapping this up. And the very first card that appears is the perspective card, the one that'll switch depending on which side of the board you're on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even something like that, like a perspective change will literally change every aspect of the dialogue you're having. And what's really interesting is to think of it this way. In this game, if you're moving to the other side of the board, all of a sudden, boom, your whole perspective changes. Now, if the other person was expecting that you to still be in that old perspective, like if you're watching the other person's cards and you go, oh, okay, I'm going to use that card with my two other cards and it'll be fine. And all of a sudden you have a perspective switch and suddenly that card that they were banking on is no longer the color that they need it to be.
Mm.
And like I said, there is so much that goes into this. There is it really is. It's a simple game. Mechanically, it's a very simple game, but there is just a depth when you really think about the levels of complexity when you really get into another person's head, when you really try to step into that level of empathy that says, I'm going to feel what you feel, I'm going to see what you see, and really try to feel the weight of what's going on in the decisions you're making and the stuff you're seeing. Like, everything is so tenuous, really, because you take a step to your left and all of a sudden your whole perspective changes. You know, you're getting to a place, but in the process you find yourself just in the completely wrong headspace and you're way off balance. And man, this game is deeper than it has a right to. This tiny little game that you can literally print out right now for free and play with a couple pennies. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
And it's, as often has happened before, we've had like a whole docket full of things we wanted to talk about, but then we just find something special about a particular game, and I think we definitely found something special with this one.
Now, when I post this, I'll see if I can find the link to the print and play. I think it's still on Board Game Geek right now.
Yeah.
And if I can find it, I'm going to put that link up because, yeah, you need to, even if it's just once. And now, it might not be your thing. It might not be, as far as a game's concerned, it might not scratch that itch for you. It might be even a little bit annoying. But I think it's a valuable exercise if you're willing even just to try it once. Like, I know people at church where I mentioned this game to them, and they're like, ah, I'm not really much of a gamer. I go, just try it. And I mentioned it to him, and he's like, oh man, you need to get me that link because I want to try this.
There you go.
And I do definitely think that if you play it, whether you think the experience of playing it in and of itself is valuable, definitely plan on doing a debrief.
Yeah, make it part of the game set. Yeah.
Yeah. Plan on, with the person you're playing with, kind of going through what happened. It's especially awesome if you win, because then you can be like, oh, remember that? Like, that was really tight and it was hard and I needed you to pick the right card and you did and it was awesome. Like, win or lose, the debrief is just a really cool just expression of it. It's funny because it's a game about two people who are having a hard time communicating. And in the process of playing this game, you become people who are better about communicating what works and what doesn't.
See, that was going to be my next question, is that as far as replayability, like if you sat down and you played with Suze again, do you think that you guys would do better this time?
I think we would.
As opposed to first.
Because obviously the cards are what they are. Like, if you get dealt a bunch of blue cards, you're in the same spot we were anyway. So I don't necessarily think that we'd automatically be better. I think we'd be more conscious of what needs to happen.
There you go. Yeah.
I think we'd be more just aware of what needs to be done. I think there were times where we'd be much more cautious. Like, there were times when we'd burn like four cards to get to a goal where nothing says we have to get to the goal immediately. There's nothing in this game that says as soon as possible, get to the goal. I mean, a lot of times we ended up doing that, but there's nothing that says you can, to use a golf term, you can lay it up
right.
and just play one card to get yourself back in balance and just be done.
Yeah,
but sure. So like there's lots of things that now that we've been through it once, we could probably do better.
Interesting. Well, I'm even more ecstatic about bringing this game to the ministry at my church. So very cool.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up right there. Jeff, tell some people about how they can, what they can expect. You can actually talk about the video that we just recorded.
That's right. Well, 2016, I think it's going to hold some pretty cool things coming out of our little ministry here. We're looking to expand into other games, which I think we've talked about before. So we're looking to expand into other role-playing games. Mike's got an itch for a new Numenera that he will lead us through. And then I'm thinking of doing some one-shots to try and delve into other game systems, whether it's like Savage Worlds. I'm going to get Daniel Fisher to walk us through that game system. Looking at other game systems that we can use as well. Diving into Tabletop Simulator, to where you can see us playing some games, whether it's Dead of Winter or Ashes or whatever's available, to try and get people out there exposed to different games and get them into the desire of buying said games. So we've got that going on, and like you said, we just recently recorded something for Kings of Israel, Fun Hill Games. Lance Hill was really magnanimous and generous and gave us a code for being able to download the game, so it's a video game version of that board game. So we'll be having that recording up on our YouTube's channel pretty soon. So
yeah,
a lot of stuff.
This is my impetus by the fact that we're recording this and the fact that I'm going to edit and leave this in here. I'm giving you the incentive to make sure that the video gets up before I put this up on Monday.
So yeah, so it should be up on the YouTube channel already. So there you go.
There's lots of other stuff going on. We just had our giveaway for our 2-year anniversary for the site. We're giving away, literally, it just, as of today, got shipped out. So hopefully by the time, you know, you guys are listening to this, you know, Don will actually have his dice. But definitely one thing that contest did was hopefully make you guys aware of the fact that we opened up a Board Game Geek Guild. And we've had a bunch of people sign up for that. We're literally, we went from nothing to about 19 people because of this contest. And I really want to see more people in that. There's a bunch of people that said they were interested. I know for a fact that board gamers love hanging out on Board Game Geek. I know we try to offer a bunch of different ways that people can connect, but because of the fact that not everybody is on Facebook or not everyone likes social media, we wanted to provide a place where people can hang out and have that kind of community like we have in the tavern that doesn't require a Facebook account. So hopefully right. The Board Game Geek Guild will be a place where that can happen. And definitely, if you're listening to this right now and you think, man, I want to talk about, you know, and then we held hands, or I want to talk about the stuff that you guys are talking about in the podcast, or something for MacGuffin Factory, or like everything that's on there. It's an Inroads Ministries guild. So literally any of our podcasts, any of our friends, any of that stuff, it's all fair game if you want to post threads about that. I know I've just kind of tried to get the ball rolling, which is, you know, what I do. So I've got stuff up there just about, you know, the Inroads plays and my top 10 list. If you guys think I'm full of crap with the top 10 games I picked, all sorts of stuff on there already, but you can also just come up with your own stuff. Quite frankly, I'm really hoping that I can push Alyssa to get some Edna Loom fan art.
Yes.
I want that. I want her to be on Board Game Geek and posting that thread because I want that to happen so badly.
She put together those really nice business cards for her character, and I thought that was really cool.
Yes, she did.
She's got the capability.
So hopefully you're going to see that a lot more. I'll put the link to that when I post this as well to the Board Game Geek Guild. Definitely love to see you guys there. You can always follow us on Facebook. We have our page. You can also hit us up on the Tavern. I'm on pretty much every social media known to man. I'm on Twitter at Inroads, or you can do my personal one, which is at Mike the Bard. You can definitely find us on Instagram, which I post a lot of pictures of us playing board games. Yeah, I'm gonna leave it at that. There's a lot of stuff going on with the ministry, guys. Always remember, too, for the rest of this year, you're going to hear it a bunch of times. You're going to see it on a bunch of stuff. We're doing our One Game for All campaign. If you're listening to this podcast, part of the way we could do this, like, if you notice, you might have heard the fact that Jeff is coming through crystal clear in HD sound. That's because we just got Jeff an upgrade to his mic, and stuff like that happens when you guys help support this ministry. The podcast gets supported. Our big gaming events happen because of the support. Extra Life happens. Hopefully, I'm hoping that I can get some decent work in over the course of this weekend, pushing forward on the Inroads Ministries core handbook, because I want to see that start coming out fairly early into the next year. So I'm a long way away from that being to completion, but hopefully we'll be able to start really getting that out to more of the board members, get their contributions into that and making that happen. We want to be able to get that to a place where we're printing that and being able to just hand that to a church at absolutely no cost. In order to do that, we really need you guys to be supporting. One Game for All, the reason we say that is because of the fact that you probably already right now have budgeted an allotment of money towards buying games. If you take one of those games and spread that amount of money across the entirety of the year, just something that simple, that one game that you don't buy can help us bring gaming to countless people. So we really hope that you guys consider doing that, helping us support, especially with the ministry going in the new year. I'm already planning Gen Con. Jeff's doing all sorts of stuff with the YouTube channel. We're trying to get more and bigger events. We have 2 game days with churches, partnering directly with churches in the area happening. in January and February, and we're hoping that that expands. There's lots of stuff growing, but with more stuff comes more costs, and we really hope that you guys will consider backing this ministry. That said, I'm going to just stop talking right now and really thank you guys for listening. Next episode, after this one, we're going to do our end of the year special where we do our traditional, you know, well, this will be Jeff's first time participating in it.
First time, yeah.
But over the past 4 years of the podcast, we've done it so that we do, you know, all different sort of things, like the newest game that we've got that we absolutely love, our favorite game publisher of the year, like all this stuff. You can definitely check out past episodes. They're all there in the archive. And we'll be doing our end of the year special for the next episode. So definitely come back. And as always, guys, remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.